Today we are continuing to read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 30, entitled Description by Kapila of Adverse Fruitive Activities, Text Number 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Narayanam Namaskritya.
Narayanam Namaskritya.
Naram Chaiva Narottamam.
Naram Chaiva Narottamam.
Devim Saraswatim Vyasam.
Devim Saraswatim Vyasam.
Tato Jayam Udiraye.
Tato Jayam Udiraye.
Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu.
Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu.
Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya.
Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya.
Bhagavati Uttamasloke.
Bhagavati Uttamasloke.
Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtikhi.
Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtikhi.
Kapila uvacha.
Kapila uvacha.
Tasya etasya janonunam.
Tasya etasya janonunam.
Nayam vedoru vikramam.
Nayam vedoru vikramam.
Kalayamanaha apibalino.
Kalayamanaha apibalino.
Vayor ivaganavali.
Vayor ivaganavali.
Kapila uvacha.
Kapila uvacha.
Tasya etasya janonunam.
Tasya etasya janonunam.
Nayam veduru vikramam.
Nayam veduru vikramam.
Kalayamano api balino.
Kalayamano api balino.
Vayor ivagana bali.
Vayor ivagana bali.
Kapila vacha.
Kapila vacha.
Tasya etasya janonunam.
Tasya etasya janonunam.
Nayam veduru vikramam.
Nayam veduru vikramam.
Kalayamano api balino.
Kalayamano api balino.
Vayor ivagana bali.
Vayor ivagana bali.
Kapila
word to word translation. Kapila vacha.
Kapila vacha.
Lord Kapila said.
Lord Kapila said.
Tasya etasya.
Tasya etasya.
Of this very time factor.
Of this very time factor.
Janaha.
Janaha.
Person.
Person.
Nunam.
Nunam.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Na.
Na.
Not.
Not.
I am. This.
This.
Veda.
Veda.
Knows.
Knows.
Uru Vikramam.
Uru Vikramam.
The great strength.
Great strength.
Kalayamanaha.
Kalayamanaha.
Being carried off.
Being carried off.
Api.
Api.
Aldo.
Aldo.
Balinaha.
Balinaha.
Powerful.
Powerful.
Vayoho.
Vayoho.
Of the wind.
Of wind.
Eva.
Eva.
Light.
Light.
Gana.
Gana.
Of clouds.
Of clouds.
Avalihi.
Avalihi.
A mass.
A mass.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The Personality of Godhead said, as a mass of clouds does not know the powerful influence of the wind, a person engaged in material consciousness does not know the powerful strength of the time factor by which is being carried. Third quote. A great politician Pandita named Chanakya said that even one moment of time cannot be returned, even if one is prepared to pay millions of dollars. One cannot calculate the amount of loss there is in wasting valuable time. Either materially or spiritually, one should be very alert in utilizing the time which he has at his disposal. A conditioned soul lives in a particular body for a fixed measurement of time, and it is recommended in the scriptures that within that small measurement of time, one has to finish Krishna consciousness and thus gain release from the influence of time factor. But unfortunately, those who are not in Krishna consciousness are carried away by the strong power of time without their knowledge, as clouds are carried by the wind.
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Dharmayam Dadati Svapadantikam Deham Sri Guru Sri Uta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamsha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragnatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Harijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dhina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namaste Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Radhaneshwari Vrishabham Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna Starting this new chapter, which is entitled Description by Lord Kapila of Adverse Fruitive Activities. So while preparing for this, I thought I'll do a bit of study on what fruitive activities actually mean. And no wonder Bhagavad Gita came to rescue. So Parpurshila Prabhupada clearly describes what fruitive activities are. So we'll try to look at what fruitive activities really mean and why adverse fruitive activities are going to be a hindrance in the path of bhakti. If anything done in extreme, it is going to take you away from the main goal. So adverse, the word adverse means that which is going to bring you inauspicious, unpredictable, unwanted results. Whereas fruitive activities are meant to bring pious, auspicious results. So when fruitive activities are done without the knowledge of the purpose and when it is done in an adverse way, getting too much into it and forgetting the actual purpose, so then it is going to produce the reverse effects. So why is Lord Kapila describing this? It's because Mother Devahuti made inquiries in the previous chapters. She requested Lord Kapila to describe the process of devotional service. That's why the previous chapter's title is Explanation of Devotional Service. Predominantly the chapter talked about devotional service and the explanation was given. Explanation means what is to be done, how it is to be done, where it has to be done, what are the people that you will be dealing with, how to deal with them appropriately, and what are the inappropriate ways of dealing. So everything is given in the explanation section. The 28th verse and the previous, 28th chapter and the previous chapters, there is a brief description of devotional service, and the previous chapter gave a detailed explanation. So that is why when we are explaining things to others, if we can make sure that we are able to incorporate these things, what is to be done, how it is to be done, when it should be done, what are the what type of people you will be dealing with, how to deal with them. So that gave a full explanation of devotional service. In that chapter, Mother Devahuti also asked about the powerful time factor. So without the pushing of the time in the material world, nothing functions. So devotional service has to be done with a sense of urgency. So when we know the influence of time factor, then we can perform devotional service with a sense of urgency. It's not that we're going to live in this world forever. We have a stipulated time And that's what today's verse is talking about. And within that short period of time, one has to make the best use, and as Prabhupada mentions in the purport, to get out of the influence of time factor. So in the previous chapter, Mother Devahuti also asked about why under the influence of time people perform fruitive activities. So to begin bhakti, some amount of detachment is also required. We've heard about the beautiful description of the different limbs of the Lord, how one has to meditate on the different limbs. Then the glories, what all the devotional service can give to us. And while describing pure bhakti, even in Nectar of Devotion, Anya Bilashita Shunyam, Jnana Karmadi Anavritam. So, jnana karma has to be given up and one has to engage in one-pointed devotion to the Lord. So, what is to be done was described in the previous chapters, and what is to be avoided? There is some temptation within us to engage in fruitive activities. So, how to overcome that is by understanding the effect it is going to produce when we engage in fruitive activities. When we compare our consciousness to a field where crops are grown, and when the crops of jnana and karma are already there, and there is no place to plant bhakti. So first, these desires for jnana and karma, fruitive activities, have to be taken off from the field of our consciousness, and then bhakti has to be planted. Second scenario is, even after bhakti is planted, one has to safeguard the creeper of bhakti from unwanted crops. So those propensity to engage in jnana and karma can take over even after bhakti process begins. So this chapter, by graphically describing the effects of adverse fruitive activities, gives the detachment from fruitive activities. So that is how we understand the purpose why Lord Kapila is going to describe this particular section. Earlier, when Mother Devahuti was petitioning to Lord Kapila and describing the qualities of Lord Kapila, even during his appearance, it is said that Lord Kapila will describe Sankhya philosophy and he will uproot the propensity for jnana and karma. And he is also described as the axe by which the heart knots in the heart can be cut. So this is just a preview. So there's a lot of cutting going to happen in this chapter, and it's going to be painful. So all the, what do they apply before doing a surgery? Anesthesia? Yeah. All the anesthesia has been applied. All the good things about the beauty of the Lord, how he smiles, how he is dressed, all those things are given. Now you have to focus on that, but don't focus on fruitive activities. So now the chopping aspect is going to come. It's the same Lord Kapila who described the previous chapter is now going to get into the mode of chopping, not to show off his sadistic mentality, but it is for our own benefit. He is just doing it for our benefit. The surgeon does a surgery, not that he's got some free time. Okay, let me take a knife. Alright, come here, I'll cut you. No, it is for the purpose of curing the actual disease of the person. So, what is to be done is described, and what is to be avoided are described in the this particular chapter. Now, what exactly is a fruitive activity? That's the first question that came up when I looked at the chapter title. And then there's going to be description and there's going to be some adverse fruitive activity. So, what makes it adverse? So, Srila Prabhupada has given a wonderful purport to text chapter 2, text 41. It's a very famous verse. Vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunandana bahu sakahi anantascha buddhayo a vyavasayanam. There, Prabhupada describes, fruitive activities are the engagements of one's reactions from past good or bad deeds. So, let's try to understand this. Fruitive activities are engagements. First thing we understand, it is an active engagement. It's not like a passive activity, like a silent meditation. It's going to be an active engagement. And what are you engaging on? You're engaging on the reactions of your past good or bad deeds. The current body that we have is a result of our past good or bad deeds. Now, in this, we are experiencing some good and bad things. When we are experiencing good things, the impetus is that, okay, I must have done something good in the past, that's why I'm getting something good now. Let me do something good now, so that my future will also be good and I can enjoy. Just as I'm enjoying now, in the future also, I will enjoy. That's why the good deeds give an impetus to do good in the future. Now let's look at what the bad deeds do. The bad deeds, when you're suffering the pain, you understand that I must have done something really bad in the past. So the lesson, two lessons you learn is, I shouldn't do bad in my current life and I should do good so that I can enjoy in the future and avoid suffering. So that's what it means. Fruitive activities are the engagements of one's reactions from past good and bad deeds. Now in the background, what's happening is you're getting desires to do further fruitive activities. I've got something good, let me do good more and enjoy more. I've got something bad now, let me get out of the suffering and I'll enjoy further by doing something good now. Now if we are busy, caught up in these activities of making ourselves happy or getting out of suffering, then where is the time for bhakti? Where is the time for thinking about Krishna and for His satisfaction and His pleasure? If you are not doing anything related to bhakti, so then what is the point and what is the hope of getting liberation? There is no hope of mukti. So that is why bhakti comes into rescue. Bhakti is also an active engagement. The description of pure devotional service says it is an active engagement. Jnana karmadi anavartam anukulyena krishna anu seelanam. So cultivation means it's an activity and you are following the footsteps of the instructions of previous acharya. Even bhakti is an active engagement. Then what's the difference? The difference is that the fruitive activities, the purpose and the aim is for our own sense gratification, our own pleasure. Whereas bhakti brings about the aspect of Krishna and you engage your senses for His pleasure. And that way the natural propensity for the soul to be active is being used and it is used for a higher purpose whereby the goal of human life is achieved so that you get out of the cycle of birth and death. The fruitive activities are condemned by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita because He says భోగైశ్వర్య ప్రసక్తానాం తయాపహృత చేతసాం వ్యవసాయాత్మికా బుద్ధి సమాధౌన విధీయతే. వాట్ ఇస్ భోగ అండ్ ఐశ్వర్య మీన్? సెన్స్ ఎంజాయ్మెంట్. వెరీ గుడ్. భోగ ఇస్ సెన్స్ ఎంజాయ్మెంట్, ఐశ్వర్య ఇస్ మెటీరియల్ ఆపులెన్స్. సో ఇఫ్ యు ఆర్ టోటలీ ఎన్గ్రాస్డ్ ఇన్ దోస్ టూ థింగ్స్, వాట్ డస్ కృష్ణ సే? యూ విల్ నాట్ బి ఏబుల్ టు హ్యావ్ ఎ రెసల్యూట్ డిటర్మినేషన్ బై విచ్ యూ క్యాన్ ఎంగేజ్ ఇన్ భక్తి. సో దట్ ఈస్ వై హీ ఈస్ కండెమింగ్ ఇట్. So, you will not have resolute determination if you are engrossed in bhoga and aishwarya. And you are going to be caught up in action, reaction. Then to counteract the sinful activities, you do certain activities, but by doing it again, you are going to be caught up. One may ask this question, well, I'm going to be well placed in the heavenly planets, and it is described in the Vedas itself to engage in fruitive activities. So, what's your problem? I'm following Vedas, and Vedas are recommending fruitive activities, and I'm going to go to heavenly planets where the quality of life is much, much higher than that of what is in the earthly planet. So, Krishna himself says, Vedaischa sarvai aham eva vedyo. Follow what is in the Vedas, I'm following Vedas. Now, how do we answer that question? Yes, ma'am.
If you go to the heavenly planets, then even though you might live so long and enjoy so long, in the end, you're going to have to come back down again.
Very good. Thank you. So, Krishna, if you're following Krishna's words, we have to follow it fully. Not that you take one section which is good for me, and I'll use it. That's called half hen logic. This side of the hen is giving nice eggs. This side of the hen is eating a lot of grains. So I like this side. So let me cut off the other side and I'll get only eggs. That doesn't work. So Krishna does say why these kind of sections of Vedas have to be avoided. Because they take you away from the actual purpose. In a multiple choice question, the teacher is designing a multiple choice question and he is giving the correct option and the wrong option, and the closest to the correct option is also there and the absolute correct answer is also there. Now the student might question, the teacher must be a fool, man. He doesn't know what answer to give. He has given the wrong answer also for me to choose. Right? Is the teacher to be blamed, right? No. We have to use the intelligence by which we make the right choice. Then why are these sections included? Is by some way, shape or form you come in contact with scriptures. Scriptures are like the breath. It comes from the breathing of the Lord. By some way, shape or form you are coming in touch with transcendence. So you are gradually going to be purified. It's not that you have to be stuck in that. As Mataji pointed out, even if you go to heavenly planets, you still have to come back. Krishna describes A Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartino Arjuna. Even if you go to the highest planet, you still have to come back. Now, we say this word come back, going, is just one word, but this chapter is graphically going to describe how a person will leave his body. These graphic descriptions will put like a speed breaker in our thought. Okay, let me go to going to heaven means you are going to die and you are going to go to the heaven. So while dying, what happens? How much painful it is? Then the chapter after that is going to describe birth. Okay, let me take birth again. No, what is involved in taking birth? How much pain the child in the womb goes through. In the womb, the child starts to pray. There's a set of prayers offered, saying that I will take up the process of bhakti and I'll surrender to you as soon as I come out. Please take me out of this. So birth and death, even though you are going to heavenly planets, you still haven't solved the problems of birth, death, old age and disease. Even if you do pious activities, you are going to take birth again. Birth is painful. And pious activities does not give a guarantee that you will not grow old in this particular world. The world, material world, is designed in such a way that Prabhupada describes, as soon as a person says he is 30 years old or 50 years old, 50 or 30 years of life has been snatched away from him. But he is celebrating his birthday. That's the illusion. That's what here it says. We do not know the powerful strength of the time factor by which we are all being carried. Oh, we think it's, oh, nice journey and we're going and... No. It's every day is taking close and close and close to the inevitable death. Towards the end, we'll try to put the brakes and, oh, no, I don't want death. Well, sorry. You made the choice. So, that's what... So, by graphically describing this aspect of death and how a materialistically motivated person who forgets the purpose of life and who takes the presence of God, who does not feel the presence of God in his life and engages only in fruitive activities, what he goes through and what are the effects, that is being described in this entire chapter. So that is why the warning is given. The time factor is limited and one has to use the time that is given to him in a effective way. Because fruitive activities are going to waste your time, you already have a limited time. Because fruitive activities are going to waste that valuable time. That is why it is emphasized here that please avoid them and take up to direct bhakti. So in the same verse where the fruitive activities are described in detail, chapter 2 verse 41, Srila Prabhupada excellently brings about how to get out of fruitive action. So now that you have described so much about fruitive activities, now I want to get out of it. So two options are there. One is performing direct bhakti. So Prabhupada quotes the Chaitanya Charitamrita famous verse, Shraddha Sabde Viswasakahe Shudrida Nishchaya Krishna Bhakti Kaile Sarva Karma Krita Haya. Faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. When one is engaged in the duties of Krishna consciousness, he need not act in relationship to the material world with obligations to family traditions, humanity, or nationality. So, after transitioning from demigod worship to complete faith in Krishna, people have this natural question, the same question I had, because I used to go to Shiva temple daily, worship, and go to Lord Ganesh first. That's how we do Lord Ganesh. We start up worship. Any worship begins with worship of Lord Ganesh. So then you take his blessings and then you go to Nandi, who is the vehicle of Lord Shiva. You take his blessings and then you go inside the sanctum, sanctorum. Then you worship Lord Shiva, then come out, then worship Mother Parvati. Then you go to the Navagrahas. Then you worship them, you circumambulate them faithfully 9 times. If not, anyone round is missed means somebody will attack you. So you go and then there will be Kartikeya. Then there will be another security, like a person who is in charge of guarding the Shiva temple, Bhairava. All a whole process I used to do very religious. So when simultaneously week, once in a while when I had more time, I used to go to Vishnu temples. There one of my friend, we used to study in the same school, he used to tell how in Vishnu temples we worship only Vishnu, we don't worship anybody else. When I heard that, I felt, hey, this guy must be quite arrogant, man. He's not he is very puffed up. He says, I will worship only Vishnu. And then he pointed out one thing. When you come to Vishnu temple, is there any Navagrahas, any place for Navagrahas? No. And then he also said, there is worship of the Acharyas, the personalities who are the Gurus. Then there is worship of Mother Lakshmi. Then there is worship of Vishnu. So we keep life simple. So we worship Guru, then we go get the blessings from Mother Lakshmi, then we go to Lord Narayan. And that's it, direct. Sir, I said, well, then what will happen? These Navagrahas, will they get perturbed if you don't worship them? He said, because I'm completely surrendered to Vishnu, he will take care. I still didn't understand. I said, okay. You saying, I'll worship this. And Saturday, Sunday, anyway, I'll go to there also and I'll give, just in case. Like Vishnu forgets. Just in case, others will also protect me. Here, when we read Bhagavatam, especially the previous 4 verses or 5 verses in the chapter where graphic description of how every demigod is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the fear factor. The wind god, the sun god, the rivers, mountains, everything is under the control of Supreme Personality. Even if you see technically, because you are worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and because every other demigod is under his control, you don't have to be fearful of any other demigod. If I don't worship, what will happen? That fear is removed because these demigods themselves are fearful of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Krishna says, you surrender unto me, I will protect. Do not fear. And Krishna gives the knowledge also, these demigods are also my parts and parcels. So don't disrespect them. That's the other extreme. Hey, now I have become a Krishna devotee. Goodbye, guys. I don't need you. Damn with you. No. Those, we see it from a point of view that these worship of demigods, at least you have come to the platform of being pious. And they are eventually leading you to the worship of Vishnu. And we understand that they are also his part and parcel. And we don't disrespect them. At the same time, we take exclusive shelter of Vishnu, Krishna. So, that is how the fear factor of not performing individual worship to every demigod is taken out. So, one option of coming out of fruitive activity is direct surrender, complete surrender. And as I mentioned in the couple of days ago, if that option is not there, Krishna says, he gives multiple options of doing Nishkama Karma Yoga so that you come out of fruitive activities mentality. So, the mentality to engage in fruitive activities, you can gradually come out by doing Nishkama Karma Yoga, where you are engaged in activities but you are asked to detach yourself from the results gradually. So, that's how we understand how a person can come out of fruitive mentality. Now, let us see the life of such a fruitive activity, such a person who is engaged in such adverse fruitive activities. This is in the yuga where Lord Ram appeared. What's the yuga Lord Ram appeared in? Treta Yuga. So at that time, when Lord Ram was in this planet, simultaneously there were two great personalities, and one personality is Vasishtha. And he was the advisor of King Dasaratha, and he was acting on that platform of advising Dasaratha. He was like the Kula Guru, the spiritual teacher for them. So, and we have another personality who is Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra will be the typical example of a person who is engaged in fruitive activity, and that too in a very extreme ways. Srimad Bhagavatam describes how Krishna cannot be obtained by a person who is doing austerities by putting himself in fire during summer or submerging himself in a cold water during winter. These austerities, Krishna says, do not attract me. But I am attracted by the devotion of a bhakta who takes complete shelter of me. That devotion, Krishna says, brings me under his full control. So fruitive activities, the mentality with which Vishwamitra entered into it, and how he got transformed, and how he himself played a part in Lord Ram's pastime. So I thought we'll discuss this, which is very relevant to today's verse. So Vasishtha was doing his austerities in a hermitage, and this hermitage is within the jurisdiction of Vishwamitra, who was a king at that time. So Vasishtha was a Brahmana and he was also a Brahma Rishi. So Vasishtha's hermitage was there, and during one of his hunting expeditions, Vishwamitra comes to the hermitage of Vasishtha. Then he says the hermitage Vishwamitra was seeing, it was a very simple hermitage and very few sages were there, and he saw Vasishtha and he paid obeisances. And Vasishtha says, what can I do? How can I serve you? What can I give you? Vishwamitra saw, okay, this is already a very simple place. So he doesn't have much expectation. He said, no, I'm fine, I'm okay. No, no, Vasishtha insisted, and then he said, ask me something. He said, okay, I'm thirsty. So, and then ask me more. So he said, I have a whole entourage of soldiers. So everybody came into the hermitage, and to their surprise, Vasishtha called out the cow which he had, and the cow was able to give sumptuous food and drinks for the king Vishwamitra and his entire army. So everybody was satisfied after having a nice meal, but Vishwamitra's eyes was always on the cow. Just by having this cow, this person who is looking like a very simple man, he provided us with such a great amount of feast. Now I am the king of this entire country, and everything in this country belongs to me. So I must possess that cow. That's how the rivalry is starting to build. And then Vishwamitra expresses his desire that, why don't I have this cow? And Vasishtha said, no, it is like I have a very personal relationship. So this is how the vision of these two people are different. Vishwamitra is seeing the cow as a commodity which can give me all the things that I need. So that is the fruitive mentality. Here is some worship, and here are the demigods, and I need something. So let me do some worship and they will provide me something. So the mentality of Vishwamitra is that of accumulating or getting things. So that's why he wanted. Whereas that of Vasishtha, he used the cow to get necessary things for his sacrifice and thereby please Lord Vishnu. That was the whole objective. That's why he lived a simple life and he used the cow to get things necessary for a Vedic sacrifice, and he engaged everything in Krishna service, and he had a very personal relationship with the cow also. So that's why he said, I don't want to part with this cow for any reason. Now, as they say, Sama, Beda, Dana, Danda. So, negotiation was going on, then Vishwamitra said, I'll give more cows, I'll give so many things. He started, and then Vasishtha bluntly said, no. You give me the entire thing, I don't need everything, and I'm satisfied with this, and I'm not giving this cow. So now, king, false ego is much higher. So, he got hurt. He said, okay, let me use my power and get the cow. So, Here is when something unexpected happened. The peaceful cow now became agitated and she produced a lot of soldiers. Now he was surprised. The cow, I thought only will give nice food. Now reverse effects are coming. So, now I'm a king, I'll fight everything. But the soldiers produced by the cow smashed the entire army of Vishwamitra and attacked him also. And he had to flee. And his false ego got hurt further. Now he started to develop a sense of revenge towards Vasishtha. So then he goes back, and Vishwamitra had access to a lot of celestial weapons. So then he came back and fought, and he put fire to the entire hermitage of Vasishtha, thinking that he and the cow will be burned. So that's how the lower emotions take over. Initially, I want to have what you have. Then I can even snatch things away from you because I want to have it. And then you should not have, and you should not leave also, even if I don't get it. You should go out of my thing, I will destroy you. So jealousy, envy, hatred, so it's all growing up. And after burning the hermitage, he thought everything is over. Then Vasishtha and the cow walk out, and then they just... Then Vasishtha now chastises Vishwamitra. You're misusing the powers that you have, and you're causing a lot of damage. Your king is meant to protect, and what are you doing? So, because Vishwamitra is overcome by this mentality of enjoying and for selfish reasons, those advice did not go into his ears. So he got more weapons, and he started to attack. And Vasishtha was calm, and he was a Brahma Rishi, so he had a Brahma Danda. He just left the Danda in front and let Vishwamitra use all his weapons. And every one of the weapons got diffused. Then Vishwamitra, he said, okay, now let me use the Brahmastra. So he takes the Brahmastra, aims at Vasishtha, and hits, and still the Brahma Danda consumes it, and Vasishtha was peaceful, unaffected by all these things happening around him. Then it struck Vishwamitra that the power of a Brahmana, the Brahma Rishi, is much, much higher than that of a king. Now, the second step of revenge is, now I want to achieve that position which Vasishtha is having. You see, the mentality is not pure. But he is going to use the sections of Veda which are going to recommend him austerities, penances and all the sacrifices, so that I will achieve that position of Brahma Rishi. That was in his mind. You can see how the determination is slowly, slowly going away from the actual purpose of human life. So now he performs his first set of penances, austerities, thinking that, hey, Brahma Rishi, I can do that, not a problem. No, it was not so easy. The first set of austerities, penances he performed. Then the first distraction came when there was another king who wanted to go to heaven directly with his own material body. His name is Trishanku. He was denied by Vasishtha. So then, knowing the rivalry between these two, he approaches Vishwamitra. And Vishwamitra said, no, I can send. So he does a lot of penances, sacrifices, and then tries to send Trishanku directly to heaven with his material body. So Indra pushes him, Vishwamitra pushes him up, like it's like a whole fight going on. And Trishanku was hanging in the between. He said, no, I'm okay, I can come back now. No, you go up. No, you come down. Like, there's a whole drama going on. And meanwhile, the power of Vishwamitra is being spent. Whatever power he's trying to accumulate, he's spending it without knowing, because it takes a lot of strength to push a person up. And again he's getting deviated. That's the first distraction. Again he resumed back, and so Vishwamitra went on to create a separate heaven and put Trishanku there. Then the second distraction, again he came back and realized he lost a lot of power. Now he has to do more austerities. This time Indra, as usual, gets a bit afraid. Okay, person is performing austerity. He sends Menaka successfully by her charm, she was able to captivate Vishwamitra. So first time he was overcome by pride, second he is now overcome by lust. Again he loses all his potency. Then he realizes the third time he sits again, now he has overcome pride and lust. Indra is not going to stop. At any cost he is going to diffuse his. So this time he sends Ramba. So the same plot was there. Now Vishwamitra said, no, this time I will not fall. I've already fell to Menaka, this time I will not fall. But he could not check his anger. Because he was so angry, he cursed Ramba to become a stone. So curse also took away a lot of strength from him. And he said, oh no, not again. He said, I've lost it again. So even though he overcame lust, he could not check his anger. Again he did a lot of austerities and Brahma came in front of him and then he's thinking, okay, please, am I ready for Brahma Rishi? He said, not yet. So again he took a vow of silence and then he performed many, many years of austerities. And what's happening? Meanwhile, time is progressing. Because he is lost in this attitude of anger, hatred and trying to achieve something, he is losing his valuable human form of life in time. And finally he gets success. Brahma comes, appears in front of him and says, okay. And he asks for this benediction to receive all the Vedic knowledge and the post, and then I must be certified, a Brahma certified Brahma Rishi. He said, that's not enough. I must be Vasishta certified. Vasishta should come and accept me as a Brahma Rishi. That is, to that extent he went, and okay, Vasishta came and he also accepted Vishwamitra as a Brahma Rishi. So initially he was awarded a title of Raja Rishi, then finally he got to the point of becoming a Brahma Rishi. When everybody was assembled, Brahma, other sages, Vasishta, Vishwamitra did something very extraordinary. Nobody expected him to do that. He went close to Vasishta, fell at his feet and begged for forgiveness. He knew how much it takes to become a Brahma Rishi. It's not so easy. After touching his feet, he did something which is more remarkable. He took the feet of Vasishta and he started to bathe with the water. And he offered all flowers, everything, and he started to worship the feet. And he took that water and he placed on his head. Now his character has changed from that of competition, envy, hatred, to that of surrender. Now Vasishta is not an ordinary person. As I mentioned earlier, he is the Kulaguru of Lord Ram. Because Vishwamitra surrendered to the devotee of the Lord, it is said that you cannot get the blessings of the Lord unless you take the dust of the feet of a devotee. You know that verse? It says about that, Rajobhishekam Vina Mahatpada Rajobhishekam. So that's one verse, it says, Etam Matistavat Urukramangri Mahiyasam Pada Rajobhishekam. So without taking the dust of the feet of a devotee, you cannot get the blessings of the Lord. So now that he has got the blessings of the devotee, then he analyzes, now I've lost so much of time. Now instead of competing with Vasishta, let me follow in his footsteps. Now he is slowly coming out of his fruitive mentality. The mentality by which he wanted to use the sections of Vedas and achieve his aim of becoming a Brahma Rishi. And he went through so much of trouble. So that is why these are the adverse effects of fruitive activities. The pain that is needed to perform them, and the result is also temporary. But this is like the coming back of Vishwamitra. Now he follows what. So now Vasishta is in Ayodhya. And he learned from the demigods that Lord Vishnu has appeared in Ayodhya as Lord Ram, and all his brothers or the Chaturvyuha has appeared there. Now because Vasishtha has left everything and is now residing in Ayodhya and he is taking the position of the Kulaguru of Dasaratha where Lord Ram is there, now I must also follow in his footsteps now. In the pretext of conducting another yajna and to protect it, he goes to Dasaratha and asks to give Lord Ram, and he first asks for Lord Ram. And as usual, wherever Lord Ram goes, Lakshmana follows. So, reluctantly, Dasaratha also gives both of them to safeguard the sacrifice of Vishwamitra. So, he takes Lord Ram and Lakshman and he takes them to the forest. And when they were taking rest, there was no cushion or a palace or anything. They were just taking rest in a grass. And at that time, Vishwamitra was able to see the beauty of Lord Ram and Lakshman. Seeing the beauty of the Lord actually melted his heart so much that he started to even compose prayers regarding the beauty of the Lord. You see how the transformation is happening in the life of Vishwamitra. The soothing effect that produced, that he experienced, he felt, I had experienced this before also. And then he was trying to recollect. At that time he realized that when he was trying to maintain the heavenly planet that he had created, he had such a big pain that as if his head was about to split. At that time he started to chant the mantras of Lord Vishnu and called out the name of Lord Vishnu very in a helpless situation. He remembered at that time Lord Vishnu appeared in front of him. That produced a calm and soothing effect. More than the pain he was able to experience how immediately on seeing Vishnu his pain was dissipated. At that time, Vishwamitra was clouded by the destination of reaching Brahma Rishi. Even though Vishnu was in front of him, because the block was there that, no, Vishnu is okay, but I want to reach Brahma Rishi first. He could have asked at that time itself, please take me out of the cycle of birth and death. He did not ask. So many times in our life, if we are preoccupied with achieving material designations, even if Lord comes in front of us, we may sometimes not pay full attention to him. He said, Vishwamitra, now I wasted a lot of time, I missed one opportunity, this time I must take advantage of Lord Ram's presence. So, absorbing the beauty, and he was overcome by emotions, and he felt that this bhakti path is very sublime and I must completely surrender. I have learnt about the path of bhakti and I thought it is inferior and I thought I will take up the other paths. Whereas bhakti brought me to this point where I am able to enjoy the beauty of the Lord, I am able to experience the material miseries. And he can vouch for it because he has gone through so much by engaging in fruitive activities. So he composes this song where we sing this when we wake up the deities in the morning, and then he appreciates the good fortune of Mother Kausalya, and he says, how fortunate is Mother Kausalya who is able to see this beauty daily. And then with that song he tries to wake these two sleeping jewel like Lord Ram and Lakshman, who are like jewels. That's famous song, Kausalya Supraja Rama Purva Sandhya Pravartate Uttishta Narasatula Kartavyam Deva Manikam. So, O son of Mother Kausalya, O Lord Ram, who is just like a lion, please wake up and perform your morning duties. So, here we saw how by giving up his false ego, by submitting himself to a devotee of Lord Ram, Vishwamitra transformed from a fruitive worker who was so much entangled in getting the result of a Brahma Rishi post, he got transformed. And to complete the story, Vishwamitra actually takes Lord Ram to the palace of Janaka, and there Lord Ram breaks the bow, and Vishwamitra is actually uniting Lord Ram with Mother Sita. And after that, he gets the blessings and he gives whatever power and here Lord mystic powers and weapons, he gives everything to Lord Ram. All that was like a burden. Now that the burden is released, he takes complete shelter, he got the blessings, and then he carries on. So here is what we see, how he could have saved the valuable time by directly surrendering to Lord Vishnu when he saw him in the first instance. But because he was caught up in sense enjoyment, sense gratification, and he looked at that sections of the Vedas which are going to help him in producing fruitive results. And he forgot the actual purpose of the Vedas, which is to satisfy Vishnu. Now that we have understood the value of time and that we know we should avoid fruitive activities, what are the things that we can do in our lives so that we can intensify our bhakti practice? And as Prabhupada mentions in this purport, to finish Krishna consciousness, within this small measurement of time, one has to finish Krishna consciousness and thus gain release from the influence of time factor. Even materialists, Prabhupada says, are very alert in utilizing time. Now we can learn a lot from how materialists are using time, and we can apply that in our own bhakti life also, where the aspects of setting proper spiritual goals. Many of you might be familiar with SMART goals. Right? It's a technique that's being used. And when I was looking at it, it exactly fits into our bhakti life also. It is very, you have to set specific, significant stretching that stands for the yes. So SMART is an acronym. And M stands for measurable, meaningful, or motivational. And A stands for achievable, agreed upon. So you set goals which you agree upon and others around you, like your authorities, agree upon that. And it is achievable and it is action-oriented. And last, R stands for being realistic or results-oriented. And T is the important thing where the time factor comes in, time-bound. So materialists also are working based on time. And by using these techniques, now that we understand we exist in a body and we are separate from it, and then we have mind, intelligence, and we need to take care of the needs of every aspect of our existence. So if we are able to use these techniques of setting spiritual goals to take care of our physical well-being, to take care of our emotional well-being, to take care of our spiritual well-being, so in that way we can use the all the methodologies or techniques that is there in this material world, which are used by materialists, but because we can use them in Krishna's service. Thereby, what we are doing, we are effectively utilizing time, which from a spiritual point of view is non-different from Krishna. When we make sincere endeavors to use time, we are actually utilizing the internal energy. So we are actually interacting with the Lord and His internal energy by engaging in devotional service. Now what stops us from achieving those goals, we must be aware of. So that is why it is realistic. So we are aware of the fact that there will be some impediments. And these impediments, how do materialists, how do they overcome, is by, there is another technique called asking seven times why. So let's take a scenario. I didn't come for Mangala Arati. I asked the question, why? Answer comes, I slept late. Okay, another time. Why did you sleep late? Because I had some services to do, like uploading lectures in the night. Okay. Why do you have to stay up all night and do that? So it's the third why. Because I couldn't do the other services on time. Okay, now why couldn't you do other services on time? Because I didn't finish my rounds. So again, why? So if we ask this, this is like a, personally we are asking ourselves and trying to find out where I am wasting my time. This is a technique which any problem solving, some of you might be familiar, asking seven whys, management gurus are here. So if we apply that, and then I got carried away by one of the services where I had to deal with Facebook, SoundCloud, and that was the actual reason why. So if we see that, if we ask seven times why and find out where am I wasting my actual time, where is it going? This is one technique I thought will be very relevant, and especially to reflect on when we have like a long weekend. Then, as Keshav Prabhu was mentioning in his lecture, every Ekadasi we should think back and see what are the areas that I am strong in, what are the areas that I need to improve on. That's a fortnightly review. And if we take up this habit of reporting to somebody about the progress we are making or the areas in which we need to improve, then it is adding more accountability. There is no wonder why we are reporting daily scores to Srila Prabhupada. We are accountable. Similarly, if we have our daily sadhana report or a weekly sadhana report, and if we are accountable and we report to somebody, then it means that I am utilizing my time effectively. I am taking the help. The challenges that we identify when we are setting those goals and when we are in the process of achieving those goals, when we report to somebody and ask for help, they are going to help us. Now, Prabhupada in this purport mentions about quickly achieving results and finishing Krishna consciousness. Nectar of Devotion actually gives five potent forms of devotional service, which give, it said that it can bring about love of God even in the heart of a neophyte. That's when I said, yeah, that makes sense. Those five potent forms, many of you might know, are, can somebody help me? Mathura Vasa, yes. Living in a? Yes, one of them. What's next?
Association of
Vaishnava, Seva. So that's when Bhagavatam gives the case study of Narad Muni, how he quickly progressed by taking the remnants of the sages, and by serving them, he was able to progress. Then what else? So two of them. What's the third? Bhagavat Shravana. So, certain amount of time in the day is allocated for Bhagavat Shravana. So, we just have to work on it. And personally, I am very weak in attending Bhagavatam classes. Only on those days when I have to give, I turn up. Otherwise, you may find me somewhere else. And I received a very strong email correcting me for not attending Bhagavatam class. So, I am working on it. Hopefully, I'll get better. So these potent forms are given, and obviously the chanting of holy name, nothing works without that. So the potent forms are there, and then we have certain goals to achieve, and then we have time, and then we have some activities that we should do. So Nectar of Instruction gives us what are the activities you must do and what are the activities you should not do. So if you ask for a job description of a bhakti yogi, what he should do, what he should not do, and what are the quick ways of achieving results, even from a materialistic point of view, if we analyze, the six Goswamis, they have put together a comprehensive system by which you can apply all your energy, and this is like a road map. So you have done this, and now after this, in this stage you will face certain difficulties, and these are the solutions. And when you progress to the next stage, another set of challenges will come, and for those challenges, these are the solution. A few months ago we had this seminar by Her Grace Urmila Mataji. She was bringing about a lot of points, and she was actually asking us to note down things that you will be doing to progress quickly or to increase attraction to Guru. And many of you might remember she had like a sheet and she wrote down things. So that is something that we can take inspiration from and put down our own plan, our own strategy, by which you can utilize the time nicely so that we can come out of the time factor. And especially these long weekends are like a good option, and in one of those long weekends only I got into Krishna consciousness. It was during Christmas, and then I went to a retreat, and that's when, yeah, let me try chanting 16 rounds. So that is how some of the long weekends are supposed to be acting as like a turning point in my life, at least. So I'll conclude here. Thank you for tolerating me. Hare Krishna. Is there any comments, questions, or corrections? What is the time frame that we should follow to come to a point of realizing that I am over endeavoring? Now, I am not sure about your level of commitment in chanting. Say for example, you have committed to chant a certain number of rounds, 8 or 12 or 16. And if your work is taking so much time that you could not even finish those rounds, and it is happening consistently, then it is time to think about whether you are going in an extreme way. Personally, at one stage when I was so engrossed in getting a business analyst role, I even sacrificed my chanting. I used to chant 16 rounds, but I used to note down this day I chanted only 8 rounds, and I will keep a log of it. So interviews back and forth, and between jobs you have to go secretly and try for another job, come back, sit quietly as if nothing has happened. So much of tension, and you can't chant your 16 rounds, because then I eventually got that role which I wanted. Still I couldn't chant my 16 rounds. Then I said, okay, I've landed up in a wrong place. So that job which I thought will give me more job satisfaction actually took away the time needed for my spiritual practice, and I wasn't happy. So when your happiness goes down, when your basic sadhana is coming down, you're not able to spend quality time with devotees, when you're starting to show signs of frustration when performing devotional service, when your relationship with the devotees are not going that great because you're spending too much time outside, these are the signs by which you can understand that you are going beyond the limit. Anybody else wants to add something? Anyone else wants to add to that point of over-endeavoring? How to draw the balance? Okay, any other question? conclude here. Oh, sorry. Yes.
What is the reason that how can it force myself to stop that being lazy and be such a passive thing?
Okay. So the question is, I made a lot of plans for the weekend and I ended up being lazy and I couldn't do any of that. One answer which I received from a spiritual master is, laziness can be overcome by love. I'm still trying to do it, but I'm just repeating what he said. So if you love somebody and if you're absorbed in serving them, you'll not think about time factor. And parents can vouch for it, because when you're so absorbed in taking care of your child, you don't think about time, you don't even sacrifice your own physical health and all that. So when we have love, so then laziness can be overcome. Second is the things that I discussed today, like if you have to report to somebody regarding your bhakti progress also, there are practical tools like a Sadhana Manager application is there. You can download it in your phone and you can log your activities. And it will say, not a very good progress, bad. All the comments will come. It's as if a person is... This is like self-disciplining. It's the same thing, the reason that you tell, if you go and tell your boss in Virgin, where you're working, he says, I was lazy, that's why I didn't know. You wouldn't give that reason. But when it comes to Krishna consciousness, including me, I give a lot of reasons why I am not doing it. But once we start to be more accountable to somebody who is superior or even to your peers, and interestingly, if you stay in the ashram, even the juniors will inspire you. Seeing how nicely they are memorizing verses, how nicely they are practicing. So you have to take inspiration from all levels and be accountable to one person to whom you will say at the end of the day, you can even come in front of Prabhupada, this is what I did and this is what I couldn't do. And so that when you know that you are, oh, somebody is watching me, so then you will, that's why Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti initially, you follow the rules and regulations given, then you can slowly progress. So you can overcome laziness by developing love, by following by the Sadhana Bhakti. Anyone wants to add to that? Okay, thank you. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.